Hey, welcome to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. I'm your host, Kevin Nagani. Today on the podcast, we've got the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy. The Senior Bowl is coming up on Saturday, so we'll preview that and talk to Jim about what it takes to put on such an important event on the college football calendar and maybe some of the players to keep an eye on as well on Saturday. And later, our pal Ivan Maisel joining us to share his lingering thoughts on the national title game, how this LSU team stacks up historically, and Travis Etienne coming back for another season, maybe the revenge tour for the Clemson Tigers coming off their first loss in 30 games. Before we get started, please remember, subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you listen to your podcast, and tell a friend. Tweet us at the hashtag CFBpod. All of it helps us get the word out about the podcast going forward. Also, check out the latest edition of First Draft with Todd McShay, Mel Kiper Jr., and Chris Sproul. This week, the guys are chatting about the Joe Burrow effect and his likely number one overall pick status and how Chase Young compares to Joey and Nick Bosa. And last but certainly not least, we need to check in with our friends at Allstate because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc., etc., etc. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. And you can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Now, on to the show.
The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Yeah, as we shift gears to the next season, some of the stars from 2019 are now focusing their attention on their next job, which features auditions to play on Sundays. And that brings us to a handful of All-Star games, including the Reese's Senior Bowl, maybe the most popular one in January, which takes place in Mobile this upcoming weekend. Jim Nagy is the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, and he joins us now here on the College Football Podcast with Herb Street and Pollock. Jim, I find this fascinating here because you recently made the announcement that Joe Burrow was going to pass on his invite to spend time with his family, and that's well-deserved and understood. But you still have so many big-name quarterbacks, so many big-name players on both rosters. I mean, the quarterbacks are Justin Herbert, Jalen Hurts, Stephen Montez, Jordan Love, Anthony Gordon, Shea Patterson. We're talking about playmakers like Michael Pittman, Zach Moss, Eno Benjamin, LaMichael Perine, KJ Hill, Chase Claypool, Courtney Davis. I feel like I'm going to run out and run out of names and still miss a bunch of big names on offense. My question to you is, what goes into the process on who gets selected to play in this Senior Bowl for you guys?
Well, yeah, first off, thanks for having me on. I appreciate having me on the podcast, but it's a long process. It really is, guys. So last year was my first year with the Senior Bowl. We got done with last year's game. We took February to really kind of recharge the batteries, and we started watching tape on this year's class last March. So before the 2019 draft, we were already working on 2020. And since I came to the game, you know, having a scouting background and being in the NFL for almost two decades, I really tried to just, you know, duplicate what we're doing at the league level. And that was, hired a staff of scouts. We have them all around the country. We're watching tape on a daily basis. During the fall, we're out at games. You know, I think of the 118 players we have in this year's game, we saw 115 of those guys live in games. So, really just trying to, structure this thing like the 33rd personnel department and bring the best of the best. And that's the great thing of working at the Reese's Senior Bowl is we do get our first pick of players. And some of the names you listed, I mean, it's great to see them all come together. You put so much time into the scouting and the recruiting, and to get them all here in Mobile like we have the last couple of days, it's been a lot of fun.
And then the combination, too, is not only do you get the players in, you got to get coaching staffs. And a year ago, you know, I saw some shirts yesterday celebrating the NFC Championship, and that is the 49ers. They were in Mobile a year ago. They got these shirts printed out, Mobile to Miami, which is pretty cool. And now you got the Bengals and Lions coaching staffs. Who determines which coaching staffs will be coaching the Senior Bowl?
First of all, that was pretty awesome to see those shirts being distributed in the 49ers winning locker room last night. That was awesome. The teams are determined by the league office, and really they just start with the draft order. So this year it makes sense. The Bengals are drafting one and Detroit is at three. They're really the only stipulation is that the teams have a full staff in place when they come down here to Mobile. So, the Redskins were, you know, they had a turnover from, Jay Gruden to Ron Rivera. So that kind of took them out of the mix. But, it's just another way for the league to provide competitive balance. You know, I think that the league is really structured for every team to go 8-8. And so that's really what makes what New England's done over the years incredible. But, so it's a big advantage for the coaching staffs to come down here. Like you said, you know, they get so much behind the scenes access with the players, not just the on the field stuff that all the teams can see, the other 30 teams can see. They're in the meeting rooms with them, and they're at training table three times a day with them. And so really on a more intimate level, get to know these players. And that's really where you can separate it in drafts. You know, just my looking back on my time in scouting, the teams I worked for, you know, when we made mistakes in the draft, it was more because we didn't know the player. We didn't know the person well enough. We knew the player. You know, the tape is really the easiest part of the evaluation. The hardest part is getting to know the person and how they're going to deal with NFL lifestyle and money and time and things that, you know, the players don't have at the college level. So yeah, to see the 49ers go from Mobile to Miami and Senior Bowl to Super Bowl was really special last night. That was cool.
And it gives you an idea of why the NFL is such a popular sport across the board, regardless of market size, because everybody feels like they have a chance when you have a four-win team a year ago now playing in the Super Bowl. It gives this hope and this belief, and I'm sure Lions fans and Bengals fans feel a certain hope and belief just because of where they're picking and the idea of you can get a high-quality player at 1 and 3, and of course, people are talking about the Bengals targeting Joe Burrow. I want to know this week, how much interaction do the coaches have when it comes to game plans and what they want to do? Because when you look at all-star games, sometimes the reputation is they're not going to be playing at a full 100%. So what do you guys talk about? What do the coaches emphasize to these players as they get ready for the game?
Well, we have specific rules in place for our game. They go 100%. You go less than 100% on a football field, you're in trouble. So these guys are all flying around. They know it's a huge job interview for them, you know, especially on special teams for some of these guys. So even the kicking game stuff, is fast and physical. But we've got our own rules of the game. We've done some things that try to protect the players. For instance, you know, quarterbacks, we don't let the defensive ends align with like a wide technique where they're getting an advantage on the offensive tackles. And it's a pretty pared down thing. These guys can come in with their own playbook, but like defensively, they can only play a 4-3 under front. On offense, there's no motions, there's no shifting. These players, it's really hard to come in and get a playbook on a Monday and then execute it on a Saturday. So everything's scaled back. They give them enough to test their knowledge and test their ability to learn football, because that's obviously a huge component when they get to the next level. So they give them just enough. But you also want these guys playing fast and not overthinking things. So, you know, that's really the delicate balance. But the two coaches will get together. Matt Patricia and Zach Taylor will get together today and kind of go over how they want to, anything they want to do outside our rules. Like last year, that wide technique on the defensive line, that's something that the Kyle Shanahan and John Gruden, agreed upon beforehand.
How do you guys separate, 110 players? How do you separate 55 to 55? Who goes where? Is this about location? What separates teammates and teams together?
Yeah, you know, I get a lot of snarky comments on Twitter about the roster. we can't stick straight north and south, but, that's our game's heritage. We've always been north and south. We're always going to stay north and south, but, you know, there's really three criteria since I got to the game that I think are important and One is obviously competitive balance. We're trying to make two equal rosters as best we can. There's always going to be, you know, one side that's got maybe a better position group here, a better position group there. But from top to bottom overall roster, we're trying to make those as even as possible. The second thing is we're really trying to keep college teammates together. You know, if we've got five Ohio State players or five Notre Dame players, we don't want to split those guys up. If we have fans traveling in to see them play, we want them on the same, you know, playing and practicing on the same teams. And then the third part, which is, you know, down the line priority, but we'd like to keep all the SEC players on the South team just because we're down here in SEC country and people that come in for the game on Saturday, you know, like to see those SEC helmets on the same side. So that's the one we stray from the most. But when we can do it, we really try to bulk up that South team with SEC players.
Now, and I mentioned the quarterbacks at the top of this podcast with Herbert, Hurts, Montez, Love, Gordon, Patterson. Is there a rule or a wink-wink on reps? Because that's six talented quarterbacks that you have to find time with, especially if one quarterback gets into a rhythm. How do we break it up so everybody gets enough time and a share of snaps?
Well, that's completely up to the coaching staffs once the players are here. They determine that, and it shouldn't be an issue this year with six. Last year we had eight in the game. You know, all seven of them got drafted, or seven of the eight got drafted. And it's a little more difficult to divvy up the snaps there when there's four on each team. So, three shouldn't be an issue, but again, we leave that up to the staffs. Usually, at least what happens in the game in the past is each quarterback will get a quarter in the first three quarters, and then, you know, based off their performance, you know, in those three quarters, that's usually who plays in the fourth. So you're kind of playing your way into that second quarter action, if you will, for the quarterback position.
What's the most important thing, if you can give some advice to these players, that they have to do this week?
I would say just come down here with a pro's mindset. I mean, this is a really unique game, and it's a great game because these guys are all wearing their college helmets for one last time. But you know, the guys that come down here with a real pro mindset and attack the week and are dialed in like a business-like manner, those are the guys, at least last year, that's the one year that I was behind the scenes and with the game that I really got to see it. I've been coming down here for 23 years as a scout, but to see it from that angle, to me, it was the guys that came in locked in day one. They kind of had that look in their eye because, again, it's not just on the field. It's how they handle themselves off the field. They are stretched really thin during the week, really by design in terms of, you know, having a lot on their plate. So they're going to have interviews, 32 interviews with all the teams. And so there's a lot going on, and they really have to be focused on what they're doing. And that would be my best piece of advice, is just come down here and handle yourself like a pro.
You're 1 year running it, your experience of that, as well as your 23 years, as you mentioned, as a scout coming to the Senior Bowl. Is there a story, a Senior Bowl story that stands out in your mind?
Oh, there's so many good ones. To me, the best stories that come out of the Senior Bowl are the small school players. You know, every year you've got guys that the league can't get a great handle on because of their level of competition, and then they come down to Mobile and they can prove themselves against the best of the best. And you know, we've got a Division III player this year from St. John's in Minnesota, Ben Bartsch. He's an offensive lineman. And, you know, Division III football to FBS is a massive, massive jump. And you look back about 4 or 5 years ago now, similar thing. Ali Marpet was a guard from Hobart College, came down here, Division III player, came into the week as like a sixth or seventh round pick. I mean, that's what, if you're a Division III guy, even if you're an incredible Division III player, it's hard to get much above that, you know, from an NFL scout grade perspective until they see you against the best. And Ali had a great week. He went all the way in the second round, just signed a huge offseason contract as one of the highest paid guards in the league. And that's the kind of stuff that's great about this game. So Ben Bartsch is the guy that I can't wait to see how he does on the field this week.
Have you noticed, too, coming, you know, for over two decades, a different mindset, especially with how offenses have kind of evolved? Now, I say that while less than 24 hours ago, the 49ers ran the ball 42 times and passed just eight. But have you noticed coaching philosophy being different and players coming in with different attitudes when it comes to what they want to do and how they want to develop themselves and get ready for, let's just say, the next 2 to 3 months before the draft?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. I do think it's become a little more specialized. It's become, you know, more regimented. And these guys get done with their bowl games, and they are immediately signing with agents. They're immediately on planes to, you know, go around the country and you know, get with a training center to get them ready for our game and for the combine and the whole process itself. So, yeah, it really, there's almost like more, it's more of a job than probably it ever was, because there's so much money involved in this whole process now, and everyone's got a vested interest in that, you know, from the guys that do the training to the agents and everyone involved. So, yeah, that's the thing I would say. This used to be a little more of a relaxed setting, and now it's a little more of a business setting.
What's the environment like in Mobile on a week like this? Because it feels like, you know, again, I mentioned there are multiple All-Star games that have popped up in the month of January, but I think everybody knows Mobile is the place that everybody goes this weekend for an All-Star game. What does that city, you know, and their connection to this game, what's that like?
It's you know, it's really why this game has been successful over the years. If you look at our game day atmosphere, last year we had, you know, 32,000, 33,000. Our stadium seats 40. We're looking to sell it out this year, you know, in large part to Jalen Hurts coming back to the state of Alabama and playing his last game. But the community support, we've had the game. This is our 71st year. The community support's off the charts. And this is such a unique event that you've got. The whole NFL descends on our small town during the week. You've got almost 1,000 NFL people in town here for the week. And it's so unique. I mean, you're going to practice. You can stand 10 feet from these drills and see these players compete, best of the best in college football. And then, you know, during the week, you can walk down the streets of Mobile and hop into a, you know, restaurant or bar. Last year I went and met some friends out for dinner, and there was three head coaches sitting in the bar together having a beer. So it's really an untapped event when it comes to the fan experience. You know, I went to Nashville last year for the draft, part of the ESPN crew, and seeing firsthand what Nashville became around that event was an eye opener. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to create more events to bring that same kind of party atmosphere to Mobile, because from a football perspective, we feel like we have so much to offer. It's one of those events when people come down here and spend the week in Mobile, they come back every year, just because if you're a diehard football fan and you're sitting on your couch every Sunday and you're watching these teams and the GMs and the coaches and the players, you come down here and you can really immerse yourself in it and be a part of it. So the city takes a lot of pride, and it's really a fun week.
Okay, so this next question is not about asking who your favorite player is, because I know you can't do that this week, especially, you know, being the executive director. But with all the scouting that you've done, dating back to March, is there a guy that you can't wait to see on Saturday? Or is there a couple of guys that you can't wait to see on Saturday perform here?
You know, one guy I would say that I'm really excited to see is Jordan Love, the quarterback from Utah State. He's the guy that I loved over the summer watching his sophomore tape. He is a redshirt junior. He graduated from Utah State. So the league relaxed that rule a few years ago, and juniors can play in our game now if they get their diploma. So meeting Jordan at the Manning camp last summer, you know, we found out that he was going to have his diploma. So we just kept an eye on him, you know, through the year and you know, kept tabs on him. And he's a guy that I think that a lot of people in the league got first round grades on, you know, through the summer. And his junior year didn't really, you know, meet expectations, and that happens sometimes. They had a coaching turnover, and, you know, I don't know or not. I haven't had a chance to talk to Jordan about it or not, but maybe he was feeling the pressure of those first-round expectations. So, you know, very similar to when Josh Allen, when he came out of Wyoming, you know, the Buffalo Bills starter, he came in off, you know, just an okay last year at Wyoming, and for a lot of reasons. They lost a lot of NFL skill guys the previous year at Wyoming. And Josh came down here and had a huge week, and he vaulted himself back up to into the top 10. I think Jordan could, with a big week down here, could get himself back in that first round, you know, conversation. And then there's always small school players that you're really interested in seeing. So, you know, one guy that walked through the door last night when he came off the bus was a safety from Southern Illinois named Jeremy Chin. And we saw Jeremy play as a staff. We saw Jeremy play twice, but I hadn't seen Jeremy physically in person yet. And he is, he's a really big guy. He almost looks like a linebacker. But going back on his evaluation, he really popped out on tape last spring when we were doing Ole Miss tape, and you know he was covering AJ Brown. We all saw what AJ Brown did this year for the Tennessee Titans, and they had Jeremy manned up in the slot against AJ Brown, and to see how he held up against him, that immediately stood out. So he was a guy we were really targeting through the summer as a small school guy for the game, and he had a really nice senior year, had a bunch of interceptions, and now to see what he looks like physically down here now I'm really excited to see, you know, how that comes together down here against the best of the best.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Those are the two guys we will circle, and keep an eye on the relationship too with that Lions staff coaching the North team with Jordan Love on there. That's how you develop things, right? And that's how you get the inside information. If this is the quarterback that you want, maybe to back up Matthew Stafford and then long term down the road in Detroit. Hey, Jim, we appreciate the time. I know it's a crazy hectic week for you guys, but we look forward to Saturday's game.
No, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it. Yeah, Saturday's going to be fun.
It's been a week since LSU closed out the season with a win over Clemson for the national championship. And Ivan Maisel joining us here for his perspective as we kind of sort things out. A little conversation about what we saw last week in New Orleans, kind of his perspective overall, and then let's move forward to 2020, some brief thoughts. But before we get to 2020, where would you put this 15-0 Tiger team in the conversation of the all-time greats, Ivan?
Kevin, in my story, I mentioned the 95 Nebraska team and the 01 Miami team, which are the in my time covering college football, I think have been the two most dominant teams. And as I have thought about it on the during the last week, I would throw in the 04 USC team. That's really kind of all I can go on. I think if I go back any, if anybody were to go back any farther than that, it's kind of, you begin to get into apples and oranges because of the way the game has evolved. And, you know, and I say that knowing full well we just got through doing a year of 150 years of comparing, you know, one generation to the other. But, the game is so different now than when it was a one platoon game that I think you're kind of throwing darts after that. So I would put them in that conversation. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm with you when you make it a 30-year conversation, because I think that's a fair conversation where you can kind of say, let's go apples to apples. And it may not be the same apples, but at least we're still talking about Fiji and, you know, as well as, you know, McIntosh apples, and we're in the same family. If you go past that, you may get in some trouble, and now you're changing fruit. So I'm with you in that 30-year window. How would you, you know, and if we stay with that 30-year window, especially with the evolutions, or we can go like 40 years too, because offenses opened things up, especially in the 80s. How would you compare Joe Burrow's season, just on a standalone, not his career, this season, to other quarterbacks?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, when I think about Joe Burrow's season, I think about Barry Sanders. So I guess that might answer your question. By exclusion, I think it was certainly statistically a season unlike any other. So what quarterbacks have had seasons unlike any other in this generation? You know, maybe Johnny Manziel in 2012, you know, maybe a Tommy Frazier. But even then, you know, one year, I guess, was it 94 was the year he got hurt. So maybe Frazier in 95. It's a pretty short list.
Yeah. Does Cam Newton enter that conversation too? Because I think that's one of the comparisons for me all season long when people are bringing up Joe Burrow's season. I always brought up Cam Newton in 2010 because I was like, look who he had around him. And that's not fair to Joe, but that's the reality of what Cam was dealing with and how he basically carried that entire team.
That, you know, that's fair, but I still have a lot of trouble looking at what Cam Newton did without the taint of the scandal that surrounded the season. Certainly statistically and athletically, he carried that team to a national championship. But that's not what I think about. So maybe that's on me. And at any rate, I think what Burrow did and how he did it, regardless of who was around him, what to me outpaced what Newton did.
How do you explain what Burrow did? Because I've had a hard time. We've talked about it extensively, especially when you look at the numbers that stand out. To me, the accuracy numbers jumping 20% completion percentage is astounding. How do you explain what he did in this Joe Brady offense, at least pass game offense?
Well, I don't think of Joe Brady. I think of Joe Hardy and damn Yankees. You know, if you want to really go back that far, you know, that was the play where the guy sold his soul to the devil to win mm-hmm. you know, to play for the Yankees. And I have no idea whether Joe Burrow actually did sell his soul, but I'll tell you this, it was otherworldly. I mean, what he did, the completion percentage is ridiculous. And in an offense that is not built on dinking and dunking. I mean, you know, he was throwing downfield and terrific receivers, but he was, I heard one of our colleagues on a show leading up to the game talk about the difference, the metaphors of high school, college, and pro, that in high school you're throwing through a doorway and in college you're throwing to hit the doorknob, and in the pros you're throwing it through the keyhole. And there we saw Burrow all season hitting the keyhole. I mean, there were a mm-hmm. couple of passes Monday night that were just ridiculous in where he put them. Not, you know, there was the part where he dropped it right over the receiver's shoulder into the only place it could be dropped. He was throwing guys open, throwing them open deep. I mean, there was just things that were remarkable display of accuracy in quarterbacking that you don't see unless you're watching Drew Brees or somebody like that. And this kid's 23 years old and had one season of starting before this year.
You know, and we could talk extensively. We could do an entire podcast surrounding Joe Burrow and this rise this year and the attitude and the confidence and how he literally backed everything up. The one thing that stood out to me on Monday night, which I'm still blown away, we started this season saying this is Trevor Lawrence's year, right? Like,
yes,
especially
yes.
The last time we saw him was dominating an Alabama defense filled with Sunday talent. And what stood out to me Monday, and it stood out in the last week, has been that Joe Burrow made Trevor Lawrence look average. And I say that the LSU defense played that role, but I also felt like Trevor Lawrence was overlooked for 16 days in the coverage. Trevor Lawrence also, it felt like, was trying to out-duel Joe Burrow. Instead of taking a check down, he was trying to make the big play because he was aware that number 9 was going to make the big play when he was on the field. And I've never seen that from Trevor Lawrence in college. So to me, it's not so much, you know, what Joe Burrow did against Clemson's defense was incredible, but also how he affected Clemson's offense, because Trevor Lawrence knew that he had to match him. If he didn't, they were going to get blown out.
That's interesting. I that may say more about us as journalists and what we put on Trevor Lawrence's shoulders for this season.
Yeah, you're right. That's a great point.
You know, if you think back to what we were talking about a year ago, it was, wow, he just took apart a really good Alabama defense. But, mm-hmm. You know, with the benefit of hindsight, we've been able to see that Alabama team peaked against LSU in November of 18, and they were not the same as the season went on. Grant, and I don't want to try to over diminish what Trevor Lawrence did. He had an incredible game, but against Alabama. But I think he's still a kid. He didn't have a lot of experience. You know, he stumbled coming out of the gate, perhaps trying to live up to expectations. He righted himself. He had a terrific second half of the season. But again, to your point, if it is he was trying to meet expectations instead of trying to do what he knows how to do, then you know, he learned a harsh lesson last Monday night.
It's pretty incredible. And I expect Trevor Lawrence and Clemson to be, like everybody, I think, number one in the country at in the preseason poll. And then they get the news that Travis Etienne is coming back. When you heard that, what was your first reaction? Because I know all over the internet, there were a lot of people saying, and me included, wow, did not expect it. I just thought for sure that this is a young man that, is maybe a first or second round pick, and he's going to make whoever drafts him very happy in that backfield, considering what he can do with pass catching ability as well. But he wants to come back another year. What did it tell you about Travis Etienne as well as what Dabo's doing in Clemson?
Well, my first reaction was delight, selfishly, because you know, it means we get to see him in college ball for another year. Second was surprise, especially because we don't see that decision from running backs very often. You know, there is the conventional wisdom now is that running backs have a finite number of rushes in them. And if you're ready, you need to go. And we've seen that time and time again. If we can take him at his word, and I have no reason not to, his degree was important. You know, if we can apply to him the logic that those who have stayed before him have used, like an Andrew Luck, like a Peyton Manning, that, and it's something that Herbie talks about anytime you ask him, you know, the feeling that you get in a college locker room can't be replicated anywhere else, especially in an NFL locker room. You know, if that's what's important to him, then terrific. I mean, we all get the benefit of him deciding that was more important to him than the money. So, bravo. And it makes me really excited for next fall.
Yeah. Another guy that's coming back for, Oklahoma State, when we're talking about the class of running backs, Chuba Hubbard, who I spent time with on Saturday night. And, he's an outstanding individual. And he mentioned the same things. He's like, I'd like to graduate and I've got unfinished business in Stillwater. And I was like, wow, good for you, young man. Especially in that position, where you can make money and the idea is maybe getting that second contract in the league where you don't see that commonplace for running backs.
So you were at the Walter Camp Saturday night.
Yes, yes. Hosting the Walter Camp, and you get the chance to interact with. So to me, the cool part is also seeing the camaraderie of former winners and All-Americans coming back. Chris Spielman, Luke Kuechly was there as well. A year ago, we had Herschel Walker. This year, Tony Dorsett. And you just look at some of the talent. Von Miller was honored. Curtis Martin, who looks like, I made a joke, he looks like he's a James Bond 007. He's the next actor in the series because the way Curtis, looked and presented himself, and he had a phenomenal speech. So when you see some of those guys come back and they're more appreciative than ever before, about, you know, I think a family that just stays together no matter what after you're done college, that stands out to me. And Chuba was an outstanding individual, like just really impressive, guy. All the All-Americans that were there, were great. There was no presence of LSU. Joe Burrow won player of the year and Ed Orgeron won coach of the year, but they were all celebrating in Baton Rouge on Saturday night because of their schedule. And I bring that up with LSU because there's a mass exodus. And when you have talent like that, they're all ready to go. But the one thing that, you know, you're losing a once in a lifetime quarterback. That is Ed Orgeron losing Joe Burrow. But now you're losing Joe Brady and Dave Aranda, both going, to other levels when it comes to coaching. Aranda, the new head coach at Baylor, and Joe Brady, the OC at Carolina. How much do you think that's going to affect what LSU is going to try to do coming back next year as the defending champs?
Well, Kevin, what it makes me think about is that, you know, this was the year where Ed Orgeron finally climbed Mount Saban. And now that he's at the top and the season has ended and he's, you know, enjoying the parade, we're asking him, well, now you got to do what Saban did. Mm-hmm. Now you got to do it again.
Exactly.
Now you got to do it again. Now you have to rebuild your staff. Now you have to rebuild your team and your staff. and do it again. And you know, who's the only guy that's been able to do that? Saban. So, I don't want to, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm just saying that this is what we've come to expect at Alabama and take for granted at Alabama. And it's hard to do. And, you know, the question is out there that can Orgeron do it? And it's no shame to say that they may take a step back because everybody else that's tried to do it hasn't been able to do it. I mean, Saban's the only one that's, you know, done it year in and year out. So that will be an interesting storyline.
It's like, again, like you mentioned, he climbs Mount Saban and he's up there, Nick's there and saying, hey, welcome to the top. It's lonely around here. What's next for you? Dabo has done it, but Dabo's done an amazing job of retaining his staff, which says a lot about the culture of Clemson. And it doesn't say anything negative about Alabama. It just says the staying power, in the program at Clemson right now. You know, to me, it's never too early to look at the top 25 for next year, and it will change dramatically. But you see what we have on ESPN.com, Clemson 1, Ohio State 2, Alabama 3, LSU number 4. And I'm like, oh, so we're going to have a repeat of the playoff? No, not really. It's just I think that's the preseason number 1. But then you got Oregon, Georgia, Florida, Oklahoma. Is there a concern – when you mention those 8 teams that seem to be consistently in that conversation, I've even mentioned Notre Dame or Michigan or some of the teams that are in the teens in this, never too early top 25. Is there concern in your mind in the state of college football that there's some fatigue here where we see Clemson and Alabama and the usual suspects like Ohio State and Oklahoma in the conversation?
Oh yeah, there's great. Yeah, I have great concern about that. And I don't really know what the answer is. Basketball seems to have gotten around that issue, with the benefit of a 64 team tournament, single elimination, maybe expanding the playoff could change that. I've been somebody that has been resolutely against expanding the playoff, but I'm beginning to waver a little bit, because I think it would bring more people into the tent. I was thinking about it more from a conference standpoint than from a, playoff, from a fatigue standpoint, but I think both arguments are genuine, and maybe that's the answer. I don't know how you expand the playoff without taking away something off the back of the player and diminishing taking a game away from the regular season, and then it's a financial issue, and I'm not smart enough to figure all that out. But, I am concerned that there's going to be a problem. The ratings haven't really reflected it, but what we haven't seen is what would happen if we had two brand new teams that really fired up, the viewers and the fans, and what would the ratings look like then? So,
yeah,
it's an interesting question.
I didn't check the I think the ratings were pretty good for Monday night, but I would imagine if you have a fan base like Ohio State in that game, there's a bump there when it comes to the ratings, because the Buckeyes, their fan base, it's magic.
Enormous.
When you see it is TV gold, let's just say, for programming purposes, whoever has Ohio State, because they do so well across the board. They're in the same conversation, I think, when you talk about Notre Dame when it comes to ratings, or whether you like them or not, you're still going to watch.
Well, let me just say this. Your point when you were reading off those teams that the Oregon, Georgia, Ohio States for next year, who uses their falling short this year as a, motivationally to take that next step? Do we see, does Oregon come back with more fire? Does an Ohio State come back with more experience and fire? Who else is going to take that next step? And to me, those are the two most obvious, Oregon and Ohio State. And that's not, you know, I'm not really telling you, you know, anybody could figure that out. But that to me is something to really watch over the course of the next 9 months, you know, as they progress toward the season.
Yeah, Ohio State's the team I have circled. As if somebody asked me right now if I had to put any money on who's going to win the national championship next year, I would say Ohio State. Just now, I understand what Clemson's getting back, but just the physicality that I saw from the Buckeyes, and then you have Justin Fields back and Ryan Day back. I would put my safest money on Ohio State right now. And in mid January,
outplayed Clemson.
They
until
did.
The last 3 minutes. And then we got to the
yes,
point
they did.
You had to know what to do. They didn't know what to do, and maybe now they do.
And I would have loved to see that that defense in front of the Buckeyes, the physicality and the cornerbacks and the physicality up against LSU's offense. Just to me, it's all about matchups, and I just thought that Ohio State's secondary did a phenomenal job against Clemson's wide receivers in the Fiesta Bowl. And to me, it's the physicality that plays a huge role in that. LSU, okay, preseason last year, LSU was top 10, but I think what they did was they surprised many people. Is there a team that you think right now, and we're 8 months away, that you think could surprise somebody? And that could be Notre Dame. That could be Michigan. Is there a team out there that you think that could have a run like LSU did this season?
No, not to separate themselves from everybody the way LSU did. I don't see that. But, of course, I didn't see it a year ago either. That's the beauty of it. I expect that Notre Dame will be very pleasing to their fans. I think they're going to be really, really good next year. I don't have that same feeling about Michigan. I think there's still a gap there in talent between – them and an Ohio State and Notre Dame. You know, but and other than that, I'm curious, not at this level of expert, you know, of excellence, but the way that Tennessee played over the second half of the season, are they going to be able to make a run at Florida and Georgia? You know, what happens with Kyle Trask at Florida?
Yes.
You know, is Georgia's, you know, I think the SEC East will be more interesting than it's been in years. Since 4 years, since Kirby's second season. You know, other than that, there's nothing yet, and I haven't really looked. I'm just speaking off the top of my head. I don't see anything else that I'm going, oh yeah, let's circle them. I don't see it on either side of the Pac-12. You know, maybe an Arizona State, but I think that's still more hype than substance. So
they got to figure out some things on the defensive side, Arizona State.
Absolutely. Yeah. As does
now,
the whole league.
I'm with you. I'm with you with that's a good point. I'm with you on Notre Dame, and you mentioned Florida. I'm really high on the Gators, and I'm very curious to see how the spring plays out because I know Emory Jones is a special talent, and does he get the opportunity to play in Mullen's system? Because Kyle Trask had a lot of success. I thought Kyle Trask did a phenomenal job with no prep time, jumping right in that offense with Dan Mullen. So I'm with you. There's another team that I'm going to keep an eye on is Penn State too. I think Penn State could do some things.
Yes.
But
that's
unfortunately
a good point.
Where they are in the division that they are in that conference against Ohio State, that's going to be an uphill battle. But those are the teams like Penn State, Florida, and Notre Dame for me, with you in the same boat of not doing extensive research and unaware of how the spring is going to play out, that I'm like, keep an eye on those teams. Maybe they can have a surprise from the outside of the top five jumping into the conversation all season long and changing the narrative. I thought that happened in 2019 with what LSU did. Ivan, it's been great. Really appreciate the time and summing things up on what we saw this past season, and then looking forward to next season, because even though we're 8 months away, I'm already excited about it. I think it was like 200 and like 20 some days away or something like that. 215 days away from college football. So,
well, you're ahead of me. I am not yet excited about it. I'm still trying to disappear and hide from the office for a few days.
Well, you deserve that, Ivan, especially
so do you.
After the 150-year celebration. Well, you did a 150-year celebration, and by the way, that was a great job, and it obviously culminated on Monday night when they could bring out the top 11 players, everybody but Bo, but to see everybody on that stage was pretty incredible.
It was a special
moment.
And I was, I love the fact that the fans in the dome seemed to appreciate it. And everybody I've talked to that watched it and the people that I've talked to that were there in the stands paid attention to a halftime program. And I think that was really cool to see.
Good stuff, Ivan. Thank you so much. We want to make sure you get some time off after a fantastic season covering college football.
Thanks. All right. We'll talk soon.
Big thanks to Jim Nagy as well as Ivan Maisel for their perspective. We're still talking college football this week at the Senior Bowl and a bunch of All-Star games, and also a wrap up from Ivan, looking back and looking forward a little bit, to the, spring schedule. And for us, we've got more podcasts coming your way. We're not stopping, even though everybody's going into hibernation. So more podcasts coming your way before the I think we got signing day, the second one in February, and of course getting you ready for spring football. I want to thank our sponsors, Allstate, for this podcast, and also Taylor Schwenk on the other side, our producer, doing a great job as always here on the College Football Podcast. I want to also thank you guys for always supporting us. We've had a lot of fun this season, and we're just getting started here in 2020 talking college football. So again, thank you for the notes on Twitter, and we do appreciate your support here, and looking forward to next week.